This is the sound of PCJ.
Media Network Plus.
Well, hello everyone. It's very nice to have you with us once again. Coming up today, Thomas Witherspoon, the director of the U.S.-based charity Ears to Our World, will join us to talk about the work they are planning to do this year. Also, we'll be telling you about a new contest that will begin next month. Now, this is a contest that I know many of you will get excited about. We have this and much more, so stay tuned. Media Network Plus, bringing you the ideas you won't hear anywhere else. First, we begin with a look at some of the headlines from this past week. Paulette McCrory is away, so we're now joined by our own Dan Hensley. Dan?
The Chinese government effectively expelled a reporter for the English language arm of television broadcaster Al Jazeera this week, a rare move against a member of the foreign media that a journalist group called an attempt to censor and intimidate foreign correspondents in China. Chinese officials declined to renew the visa and accreditation of Melissa Chan, an American citizen stationed in China as a reporter for Al Jazeera English since 2007. The broadcaster said it would shut down its English language office in Beijing because Chinese government officials declined to allow it to bring in a replacement. China Foreign Ministry spokesman, speaking at a regular news briefing Tuesday, said Ms. Chan's visa hadn't been renewed because the reporter had violated regulations, but he declined to specify which rule she had broken. "We have already made the laws clear," he said. It is rare for China to kick foreign reporters out of the country. Notable cases include John Burns of the New York Times, deported in 1986 after being caught traveling into areas then off-limits to foreigners, and John Pomfret of the Associated Press and Alan Pessin from Voice of America, both expelled after covering the 1989 Tiananmen crackdown. The BBC is expecting an operating surplus of 140 million euros for its latest financial year that ended March 2012, which will be used to help fund its Queen's Jubilee and Olympics coverage. According to leaked figures, the BBC's public service operations have delivered the 140 million euro surplus in the past 12 months. The amount left over from license fee income, once the cost of producing and distributing its TV, radio, and online content is taken into account. Internal forecasts made by the corporation also suggest that the BBC's commercial enterprises, which includes BBC Worldwide and international operations, such as BBC World News, are predicted to deliver around a 219 million euro operating profit. China's CCTV News, part of Central China Television, has applied to the Canadian Radio and Television Commission to add its English and French feeds to the list of foreign TV services eligible for distribution in Canada. The process will go through public hearings. CNN's two main rivals, Fox News and MSNBC, have gained viewers in the past year compared with the same period in the 2008 presidential cycle, while CNN has lost viewers, according to Nielsen's media research. CNN's ratings weakness is putting a spotlight on Jim Walton, who has been president of CNN Worldwide, overseeing the network domestically and globally since 2003, a period in which the network's flagship U.S. channel has fallen farther behind Fox. Mr. Walton argues that the ratings on his flagship U.S. channel hardly matter. The U.S. channel is just one of CNN's many media platforms, which include CNN International, CNN en Español, HLN, and CNN.com. Keep in mind the advertising revenue that we bring in for the primetime revenues for CNN U.S. is less than 10% of the overall revenue at CNN, said Walton. Blind activist Chen Guangcheng, the youngest of five brothers, began grade school at age 17. He was inspired to tackle injustice by listening to U.S. broadcasts on Voice of America and Radio Free Asia. Chen took up the cause that would take his freedom. Thousands of victims of forced sterilizations and abortions under China's draconian family planning policies. There are some grumblings that he could end up as a commentator on Radio Free Asia, but as of yet, no one will confirm or deny this. I'm Dan Hensley.
This is PCJ Radio on 88.2 FM. This is PCJ Radio on 107.5 FM in Nairobi, Kenya. And nationwide on 580. This is PCJ Radio on KBCT in Waco, Texas. This is PCJ Radio on 9955 kilohertz to Latin America. This is PCJ Radio on 7590 kilohertz DRM. On shortwave, satellite, and the internet, this is PCJ Radio.
And this is Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio, heard around the world on the World Radio Network, shortwave and on Sky Digital in the United Kingdom, and on Sirius XM in North America. Now, many of you listening right now may think that shortwave is an outdated technology, but in many parts of the world, shortwave is the only way people can find out news and information. Southeast Asia, East Asia, and Africa are just three regions that even domestic broadcasters use shortwave to reach their audiences. Ears to Our World is a U.S.-based charity set up by Thomas Witherspoon and is an organization that helps teachers in Cameroon, Haiti, Kenya, Mozambique, Sudan, and Uganda to use self-powered radios as a teaching tool. In March, I met up with Thomas at the SWO Winterfest in the U.S. and sat down with him to talk about the work they do.
Well, first of all, we continue to do what we're doing with shortwave radio and sending self-powered shortwave radios to teachers in third world countries and in remote areas of the world. Also, we've tried to put a focus on some availability of pre-recorded content. So we're looking at devices that make sense in the areas where we're sending them, appropriate technologies that will allow people to have pre-recorded content. It can be educational, humanitarian, informational, it can be entertainment. But we want people to have the ability to play things over and over and over again, or record broadcasts that they hear over shortwave radio.
Now, since the last time we spoke, of course, the economy is a lot different now than what it was. Are you finding it more challenging now to get donations and to get sponsors for Ears to Our World?
Yes, it is. These are challenging times. However, the great thing about what we're doing doesn't require a lot of money. So we're able to operate on a shoestring budget and just be very careful with how we do our logistics with partnership organizations. So we kind of piggyback on what other people do, and we're able to send things into countries in a much more efficient way, a much more cost-effective way. But, you know, as far as, like, the big funders go, our really large funders are Eaton Corporation, and they haven't stopped at all. They pretty much support us carte blanche. When we go to them and we need radios, they donate them for this cause. And so we're still receiving lots of radios from them, lots of other support from them. Also, Universal Radio, who's a big supporter of ours, has been there for us. And a lot of the, I'd say a lot of the donors that we've been working with, they've only increased their donations over time, and they come back every single year. We're sitting here right now at the Winter Shortwave Fest, and in Plymouth Meeting, Pennsylvania, the folks here, every time I come here, we receive more and more donations.
Now, if somebody was to ask you, okay, Thomas, look, I just donated, let's say, $50, $50. How is that spent?
Well, in truth, the way our money is spent is primarily on logistics expenses. So it'll go into shipping, the bulk of it. Some of it goes into, we always tell people that it costs us about $40 to $50 to send a radio to one of the countries where we work, to the bulk of the countries where we work.
So one donation, $50, means one radio?
Yeah, basically, yes, that's correct. And in truth, you know, it varies a little bit from country to country. Some countries are a little cheaper to go into than others, but we try not to even look at that. We just want to get radios into the areas where they're needed most. South Sudan is probably the priciest country for us because the logistics required are pretty extensive.
Well, South Sudan is pretty much a new country. There's they're building infrastructure from scratch. There was nothing before.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. In fact, it's the lack of infrastructure that makes it so incredibly difficult. Plus, it's kind of dangerous taking the radios in there. We fly the radios into Nairobi, and our partner organization, Project Education Sudan, they actually take the radios the rest of the way, and they have to do it through chartered flights, through very, very long truck rides on roads that sometimes get washed out, have potholes in them, that have people that may hijack you on the way. It's very challenging. And once they get to where they go, we make sure, in fact, this is where a lot of our time goes into. We make sure that each and every piece of technology we send out is 100% functional. We do 2 to 3 quality checks on them before they go out the door. We can't risk putting all that effort, all those resources behind technology, and then the technology not work when it gets there.
Since the last time we spoke, there have been a number of cutbacks in international broadcasts. The BBC, for example, Radio Netherlands had a substantial cutback and will be cutting many of their shortwave frequencies. And in Africa, I mean, the top international broadcasters that are listened to are Radio France International in French, in the French part of the continent, BBC World Service in English and French, and also the Voice of America. With all these cuts going on, do you say to yourself, what are we going to do? Or is there still enough out there that it's still worthwhile to do this?
Yeah, where we work, there are still shortwave broadcasts going there. Broadcasters have been pulling out of, I think, pretty important areas. But at the end of the day, where we're working, people are still receiving those broadcasts. Now, it concerns me greatly that international broadcasters are not doing the research that they need to do to find out who's listening in these countries. I think that there are a lot of countries around the world that are ruled by repressive regimes. There are countries in the world that do not have access to electricity. They don't have access to telecommunications like other parts of the world do. Yes, mobile phone technology is there in a lot of these areas, not necessarily where we work in South Sudan, but in a lot of areas mobile phone technology is penetrated, but there's a lack of electricity to operate the cell phones. If there's one thing that we've been doing this year, you're asking about some of the new things. Last year, I spent a great deal of time talking to broadcasters, international broadcasters, letting them know what we do, that we're listening, and that we could be a resource for the stories they need about their listenership. We also have been trying to make people aware of what's going on in international broadcasting so they can talk to their local representatives and maybe talk to the governing bodies in their countries. People write me all the time, how can I help? How can I help Ears to Our World? And I always tell them, contact your government. Contact the people who are in the governing body over your international broadcasting stations, and let them know that international broadcasting is a very important, very viable lifeline of information.
For this year, what are your goals for the next 12 months?
Our goals for the next 12 months are to increase the amount of radios that we're sending into South Sudan. We are working on a project in Rwanda where we want to take radios, but also I'd say the third new thing we're working on, and this is a very exciting project, is in response to what our teachers and children have asked for, which is they have a lack of information, and also in these areas, since there's a lack of electricity, they have a lack of lighting. And we're thinking more in terms of like personal flashlights or torches. And so we actually are very lucky in that one of our technical advisors, who's also a member of the Winterfest here, Greg Majewski, he has developed a flashlight for us based on some open source internet resources. It's an LED flashlight. It's very bright, quite light, and it runs on dead AA cells. So you can take a AA cell that had been in another flashlight, in a radio, in whatever. You put it in this homemade flashlight, which has about 11 components. You can put it together yourself without solder, without any resources. And A dead AA cell can run the flashlight anywhere from 20 to 120 hours or more, depending on the quality of the cell and how far it was depleted. It surpasses anything that you could buy in a grocery store, in a supermarket. If you went out and bought a flashlight, it would not perform the way this one does. And they're very affordable. I would say that the cost per unit is going to be well below $2 per unit after we start buying in bulk. We're going to call this the Humanolite. And teachers and children will be able to build these. And it could spark an interest in electronics engineering in children. And it'll allow them to have a way at night that they can read.
I saw some of them earlier made out of wood. The ones that are here at the SWL Fest, these are not the same ones that you're going to be sending out, or are you just, is the design going to be different?
The design will be very similar, actually. We may eventually sort of mass produce the board that the light will be put on. But actually, what Greg did, what you saw here, is the way that we want this to go. We want it to be a contextually appropriate technology, meaning a technology that works where it's going, where people can repair it easily. And when a part breaks, they could actually go replace the part with something locally. So all these parts can be sourced within Africa very easily, and they're all very inexpensive. You know, it's funny, you know, we struggle with radios. I mean, radios are much more complicated, and to have a good radio, you can't just build it necessarily unless you're an electronics engineer. Flashlights are much more simple, and these are easier to understand. And literally, in a suitcase, when you carry the components, you could probably carry thousands of flashlights in one suitcase because the components weigh next to nothing. They're very small, and they pack away nicely. And so it's a very effective way of doing that. And once someone knows how to build one of these, they can build more. In Rwanda, what we're hoping to do is work with some teachers there in a school that they've just started. They need to raise funds for their school. We're going to give them the tools and teach them how to build the flashlights. And then they're going to take the flashlights, build them themselves, and sell them locally. And then the money from that will help support their school and help support the production of more flashlights for their community.
I was speaking there with Thomas Witherspoon, the director of Ears to Our World. If you would like information on how you can get involved and to make a donation, just go to the following URL, www.earstoourworld.org. Once again, that's www.earstoourworld.org. You're listening to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio. Now, those who are regular listeners to this program, as well as other PCJ programs like Happy Station, Jazz for the Asking, and others, know that from time to time we have contests where we give away shortwave radios. Well, we have a contest that is actually, well, we're going to be officially announcing it on next week's show, and the first winner will be announced in June. That's going to be the May winner. We'll announce the beginning of June, and then another one in July, August, September, October, November, and the beginning of December. That's right. We have seven Sanjen ATS 909X shortwave receivers that are going to be going out to seven very lucky people. Next week on the program, we'll give more details on how you can have a chance to win one of these radios for May, June, July, August, September, October, November. And I want to mention again that the November winner will be announced on the first show for the month of December. Now, it's not going to be just merely sending in an email. No, we can't do that. We could do that, you know, but that would make it a little bit boring and wouldn't make it exactly challenging. This is going to be a little bit challenging, but I think it'll get your creative juices, as they might say, running and flowing. So stay tuned, because we'll have more information on that on next week's show. But this week, however, we do have something very, very special to give away. As you may or may not know, Radio Netherlands Worldwide on Thursday and Friday did a 24-hour radio marathon to say farewell to their Dutch broadcasts. Well, I have, right now, in my hands, one very rare pennant that was issued by Radio Netherlands, well, I think I would probably guess in the late 60s and early 70s. You know, the little flags, the pennant things, right? And we have one original one to give away. It's in a kind of a cellophane kind of plastic, so it's being protected. There's a little damage on it, a little bit of fading. But nevertheless, this, I think, would be a lot of people would like to get this to add to their collection. Well, all you need to do is send us an email. The email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. Once again, mnp@pcjmedia.com. Make sure that in the subject line, you mention that this is for the Radio Netherlands pennant. And we only have one to give away. And we are going to be drawing at the same time another pen and notepad. Another rare item, by the way, because only a few of them were made for the 25th anniversary of the Shortwave Listeners Fest that took place at the beginning of March this year in Plymouth Meeting, Pennsylvania. We've already given away two, but I have one more, and we'll announce the winners next week. A couple of weeks ago, we had a contest, and we ran a series of interval signals. Now, for those who didn't remember what they were or hadn't heard them, here they are again. And that was the, well, seven interval signals that we ran. And, of course, you had to guess the countries or the broadcasters and have a chance to win a gift that we already sent out to a couple of people. And for those who didn't know what they were, because some of you got some of them, but you didn't get all of them, but they are the following: KOL Israel, Radio Baghdad, Radio RSA, that's Radio South Africa, Radio Norway International, Radio Denmark, Radio France International, the Rhodesian Broadcasting Company, and Radio Damascus. I think we should do that again at some point. All right, what's going to be happening with propagation now over the next 7 days? Here's Dan Hensley, our propagation editor.
The 10.7 centimeter flux will be 115 from May 12th to May 14th, 2012. A 10.7 centimeter flux of 120 on May 15th, 130 on May 16th. May 17th, it jumps up to 140, and on May 18th, the 10.7 centimeter flux jumps up to 145. The A index will be 5 for the first 2 days of this week, that's May 12th and 13th, And then for 2 days after that, that's May 14th and 15th, the A index will be 8. For the rest of the week, the A index will be 5 from May 16th to May 18th, 2012. The KP index will be 2 on May 12th and 13th, followed by a KP index of 3 on May 14th and 15th. On May 16th, a KP index of 2. May 17th, a KP index of 3. May 18th, a KP index of 2. Sunspot 1476 poses a threat for X-class solar flares, currently crackling with M-class solar flares. Eruptions in the days ahead will likely be geo-effective as a sunspot turns to face Earth. Here's a statement on this from the NOAA. Forecasters with NOAA Space Weather Prediction Center are closely tracking an active region of the sun that is rotating and will be directed toward Earth within days. The region, known as 1476, has produced a few flares so far, but no Earth-directed blasts of material that could threaten the power grid, render global positioning unreliable, or damage satellites. Also, new sunspots are emerging as discovered by NASA SDO observers. No numbers have been assigned to these sunspots yet. Back to you, Keith.
Well, thank you very much, Dan Hensley, for this week's Propagation Report. And guess what? We are out of time. Once again, if you wish to contact us, our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. Or you can listen to this program again, as well as past editions, by going to our website, www.pcjmedia.com/Media Network Plus, all one word. That's www.pcjmedia.com/Media Network Plus, all one word. So on behalf of vacationing Paulette McCrory, I wonder where she is. I think she's having a good time. She hasn't responded to any of my emails yet, so I think she's definitely having a ball. Anyway, on behalf of Paulette, Dan Hensley, this is Keith Perron all the way in Taipei, Taiwan, saying so long, take care, 73s to you all, and 88s to the ladies.